really complex terrain. The geography doesn't lend itself to wind unless you're out in the middle of Lynn Canal.
Haynes continues to look into alternative energy sources with wind and now geothermal energy. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more up next. The exploration for alternative energy sources for the Northern Lynn Canal continues, with the Haynes Energy and Sustainability Commission taking a closer look at geothermal energy already in use in the Chilkat Valley. Midday on Tuesday, a commission subcommittee meets publicly in the borough conference room to discuss geothermal heat systems with Haynes resident Ned Rosbicki. The geothermal gathering follows a similar presentation on the practicality of wind power for the area last month. Reuben Lowen, like Ned, is another Valley resident. He has work experience with the Alaska Energy Authority and Kotzebue Electric's municipal wind system, which he calls the first utility-scale wind farm in the state. Commissioner Jim Stanford asked for his overall thoughts.
What's your feeling about Haynes? Is it possible here? Even partially possible?
It's probably partially possible, but I would say that I'm pessimistic. The things that I see, and I don't know this meteor area as well as a lot of people here, are that you've got really complex terrain. The geography doesn't lend itself to wind unless you're out in the middle of Lynn Canal. And you've got a lot of tall trees, big steep mountains, and that's going to cause turbulence. It's going to mean as soon as you come off the water, you're going to see a lot less wind.
The feedback is just the most recent installation to years of wind energy research by the commission. In the last few years, the commission worked with the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve Advisory Council to begin research on the effects of wind turbines in or near the preserve. Then, the commission was approached separately by two private individuals interested in developing a wind resource on the Chilkat River. Most recently, the commission embarked on a partnership with the Haynes School District to bring wind for schools to the borough. The program would bring test turbines to the valley, along with learning materials for science students. But that wouldn't be the first wind power in the area, since different residents have used the alternative for years. Lowen described the attributes of two example locations for wind power generation near Haynes, beginning with the Chilkat Valley.
So this would be a representative site of the Chilkat Valley. It's out there, pretty clear around it, not a lot of trees. You're going to get some of that wind coming in. You've got some steep terrain behind, but if you turn the page, that historical data shows Haynes having a pretty weak wind resource there. Wind power is typically looked at in wind density, which is tells you how many watts per area. So you could take any turbine, if you know how big its swept area is, give you a rough idea of the amount of watts you could generate with that turbine of that size per your wind resource. Haynes scores a 2 from 1 to 7, which is a marginal or poor wind resource.
And the tank farm on Lutac Road.
I'm living just out of town on Lutac, not too far from the tank farm. I see a lot of good wind out on the water, but I don't see as much on the beach where I am. We have some good wind events associated with storms, and there are definitely some times where we've had some good power. But what we're really concerned about here is your average annual wind speeds, which I don't think are... Unless somebody can point me to another site, up on a ridge, right, that kind of thing, or a peninsula that sticks out into the water... I don't see a lot to make me really excited about the invention here. Yes.
Ultimately, this is just part of the ongoing information gathering process. The commission is also investigating programs that make funding test sites possible. The commission meets to discuss geothermal energy in the Chilkat Valley on Tuesday at noon at the Haynesboro Conference Room.
Well, let's go grab the bags and then we'll go get gloves.
Starvin Marvin is teaching the 6th grade class how to turn their trash into something useful.
I don't know what it used to be. It's about to be dirt.
Starvin Marvin is the name of the composting project at the Haynes School, and he just had his one-year birthday. The project is part of the science class since it teaches biodegradation and the activities of micro and macroorganisms. Marvin also teaches math. The kids had to figure out how many gallons of paint were needed to renovate the shed where Marvin lives, just a short hike from the school.
It had been used for a few years, and so we cleaned it out, and the kids sanded it and painted it, and we got windows put in it, and it's working just fine.
Well, all the milk cartons and they have like outer wax plastic covering.
It starts in the lunchroom after the bell rings. Sixth graders take turns sorting through the food scraps that diners have disposed of separately from their non-compostables. Today, it's Neil, Autumn, and Bailey under the guidance of science teacher Pam Randles.
Paper. I wouldn't open that.
Some of the paper are good.
Yeah, there's foil are the wrappings fortunes? For the other top milk. There's these.
The fortunes are compostable because the paper's not coated. Okay.
Wait, is that compostable?
This?
Yeah.
No.
Styrofoam.
Styrofoam.
They throw the non-compostables away, the odd plastic lids, aluminum foil, and disposable cutlery, and take the good stuff, the food and plant scraps, by sled to Marvin.
I've done it millions of times, so it's pretty easy.
It is easier now because we have snow to carry the sled on.
Yeah.
Three barrel-sized bins are inside the shed. They hang horizontally so they can be rotated regularly. The kids combine the food scraps with sawdust from the school wood shop and the paper from the school office and some other places around town, like the preschool.
2 gallons of sawdust and 2 gallons of paper, shredded paper.
That's our recipe.
Nick has composted at home before, but he says the school project is helping him get better at it and learn some other skills, too.
You try to get it done well and quickly, and I've gotten used to the smell so much that I don't even think it's bad anymore.
I still think it's bad.
And it is a stinky science class, learning hands-on about molds and rot and bacteria, nematodes and isopods. As the stench burned our nostrils, the kids described the process.
There you go. Grab the bottom of it, Neil. Here, grab the bottom right here. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. And slowly, slowly.
So, like, the second day one of them starts, there's, like, big clumps of mold on it. And, like, it kind of looks disgusting the first time we saw it. Okay, it was.
Wasn't too disgusting to me.
Mold.
And then
shrinks.
Turns into dirt kind of stuff, and we're going to plant a garden in the spring. Okay.
See, this is the prime cooking situation. So after 3 or 4 days, it starts to cook like that. And the temperature gets up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wait, don't eat them.
Well,
there's little bacteria in there, and so don't they get hotter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so it
they,
like cooks all. Yeah, so they cook it all up.
The mixture spends 4 weeks in the bins going through its heat stage. Then it gets dumped out into a finishing bin that looks a lot like the corner of a horse stable.
There's fungus and there's bacteria and there's also little insects in there. And in that pile, there's also worms, and they're all contributing to the process, you know, of breaking it down from food and turning it back into dirt. And then we'll plant it and turn it back into food, and then we'll turn it back into dirt, and then we'll end around and around.
Composting is bringing the kids some interesting perspectives, too.
That you can bring things back to life after they're dead.
That's a good
idea. Like zombies. Yeah.
And it is quite alive. It's a steaming community of decomposers in those piles, successfully holding at 140 degrees Fahrenheit. But it wasn't always so thriving. The first year was a lot of trial and error, says Randles.
Because the school lunches contain milk and dairy, and that's sort of a no-no for composting, we had to rebalance the recipe in order to account for that, because with the meat and the dairy, it can get really stinky, like really stinky. So they suggested, they meaning the Cooperative Extension Service who helped us, suggested that we add more shredded paper and more sawdust so we get a 50-50. The shredded paper and the sawdust are carbon sources, and the food is nitrogen source, and if it's about a 50-50 balance, it seems to be less stinky. Or it's this composty smell. It's not a nasty rotten smell. It's just a cooking kind of a smell.
The bins that the school uses are a creation out of Sweden, and they've been working so well other groups in town have orders in, like Haynes Assisted Living.
Well, these were made in Sweden. They're cold weather people. They understand cold weather. And so they're insulated with 2 inches of styrofoam. Just a second, let's tip it.
I call spinning one.
Well, there's three of them. You can each spin one.
That
Notice
one.
Styrofoam.
No, this one.
And it's 2 inches of styrofoam all the way around. There's two compartments in each one, and we can get a week's worth of stuff in one side because it gets smaller as it composts.
And sometimes two. Remember, it was really small.
Okay, can somebody hang on to it so it doesn't spin?
The sixth grade plans to use the finished product in a school garden in the spring. But the groups who came up with the idea of Starvin' Marvin are still trying to make that happen.
There were several people who were interested in seeing it happen. The landscape committee that went with building the new school was one of them. Haynes Friends of Recycling was another one that were groups interested in seeing it happen. The initial interest was the composting. The hope was that it would extend into gardening, and we're still working on that part of it. It sort of depends. What we try to do is coordinate it with the grade level expectations and the standards so that it's just a fun way to teach what you have to teach anyway. So we'll see which teachers want to participate in what part of it. And at this point, we have yet to secure land on a long-term basis. So we're not exactly sure where we're going to be.
In the meantime, it's giving the kids a chance to understand just how much trash they actually accumulate, and it's saving the cafeteria some losses, too.
Spoon!
Sometimes we get silverware in there, too, so we return it to the cafeteria.
One day,
and they used to lose a lot. They don't lose a lot anymore.
One day, me and Tristan were doing this, and we found 26 spoons and 4 forks. Whoa. And they were all plastic, though.
Whoa.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Marvin and the kids are keeping many pounds of apparently useful waste out of the trash cans each day. The 20 students in the class rotate in teams of 2 or 3, so they're each on duty about once a month. And they don't seem to mind the work, except Chicken Day.
And the Chicken Day is the heaviest day.
Oh, yeah. That day we had chicken was really
so
heavy.
It was so heavy.
It was really hard to carry.
At least we had slept. Yeah,
because it was just like breasts
chunks.
And thighs and legs.
Okay. It was so heavy. Okay.
The Haines School is only one of many northern panhandle places that's seeing the benefits of reducing their waste by letting it rot. Check out the Master Gardeners, Community Garden, Friends of Recycling, or even the Forest Floor. Or just ask a sixth grader.
We got it?
Mm-hmm. Dumpster!
Alrighty. Wash hands! And then tie the top of that closed, please.
Reporting for KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell.